Well, good morning to you. Happy to be here with you, and greetings to our brethren in Sierra Vista, and hopefully you're receiving this, and also El Paso. So always glad to have all of you aboard. Mr. Buchanan was talking about having a work party tomorrow. There used to be a lot of those. In fact, ministerial trainees or assistants were used in that regard, mowing lawns, pulling weeds, washing cars. I mean, that was the order of the day. But fortunately, that's not happening anymore. But anyway. You know, the book of Revelation is a compilation of information that God prepared, given to Christ, who related it to an angel who made it known to the Apostle John. I mean, it went through all the various steps, and we have it now to know, at least in part. We don't understand every aspect of it, but at least to know in part what's going to happen in the future. Because that's the purpose for God giving it, to show to the servants of God things that would shortly come to pass. And that shortly come to pass is probably very close now. God informs us of things we need to know, so we're not blindsided by events in this world. And it's filled, you know, the book of Revelation is filled with staggering revelations that God wanted the church to know. And this was well after Christ gave his life. The church was formed, and the book of Revelation given to the Apostle John. And I think all but the Apostle John were probably gone by then. They were probably all died. But included in this revelation are the incredible events that were to occur in the church and the world before Christ would return to establish the kingdom of God. That's the reality of it. And as a part of the revelation, God made known that there would be a place prepared by God for some portion of the church. This would be for a 3.5-year period, the same amount of time that the two witnesses would prophesy in Jerusalem, and the same amount of time as the great tribulation which Satan shall bring upon Israel and this world. There have always been speculations by various groups as to when some of these events shall occur. Everybody always wants to know whether God reveals it or not, or when it's going to occur. In Revelation 12, God speaks about the church, the Son of God who was born as our Savior, and about Satan who would seek to destroy the child as soon as he was born, and we know that occurred. That's past. But God speaks further about this Son who would in the future rule all nations. Then God relates how he would prepare a place that we used to call the place of safety. It just says a place, but a place certainly of protection for the church for 3.5 years to be protected from Satan. In Revelation chapter 12, after God related about the birth of Christ and then his future and about Satan seeking to destroy. But in verse 6, it says, "And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And skipping down to verse 13, it says, "And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman, the church, which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness and to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, from the face of the serpent for 3.5 years. You know, it's interesting about an eagle. I read something just the other day where the eagles, you know, they may have 2 or 3 or 4 young, and there comes a time when she's ready for them to fly, be on their own. And so she disturbs the nest and takes them out one by one and drops them, and then catches them on her wing before they fall to the ground. And she does this repeatedly until they learn to fly, each one of them. Interesting about eagles, you know. And in verse 15, it says, "And the serpent cast out of his mouth waters of flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood, seeking to destroy. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And then the dragon was wroth, very angry with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Christ." Now, God did not state at this time where this place would be, did he? He didn't say where this place would be, except that it would be in the wilderness. God did not say who in the church would be sent to this place of safety, how they would get there, how the necessary food, water, necessities would be provided. No further information, not then, not in the 1950s or 60s or 70s, in the early stages of this era of the church. God has not even revealed even where this place is located, even in today. We don't know where it is. We don't know who's going. We don't know any details about it. Oh, we've speculated a lot. We speculated a great deal. And God probably will not reveal where this place is until the church needs to know. That's what I perceive, but I don't know. But typical of people, even the Church of God, speculated that the place might be Petra. And it may be, but we won't know until God reveals it. But we can be assured that God has a place, because he says he does, and Satan will seek to destroy those whom God is protecting. But Satan will make war with the remnant of seed who are not in this place. But God doesn't specify who that is either, exactly. So there are things that we know and things that we do not know. But God reveals to us things we need to know, things we need to know for the work that we need to do and for our own salvation. Because there are things that God reveals and things he does not, and things he shall reveal in time. But God has a time frame, doesn't he? He has a time frame for all things he makes known. But we still have the curiosity. That doesn't do away with the curiosity that the human mind has. We still have the curiosity to want to know now, and so we speculate. If you've been around for many years, you know that the speculation of this place being Petra was pretty rampant. It was pretty rampant in the church at one time, though the speculation has abated, I think, the last few years. Dr. Herman Hay, whom some of you may know or know of anyway, who was one of the first students at Ambassador College and later an Ambassador College professor, he did a great deal of study and research on Petra. And it's probably Dr. Hay's research that led to much speculation as to Petra being the place of safety, because his research discovered that following the departure of the nation of Israel from Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb, there's evidence that God took Israel to Petra, where they were poised to enter the Promised Land. At least this is what God had in mind for them to enter the Promised Land, to fulfill his commitment to Abraham and to Isaac and Jacob and to all the offspring. But Israel didn't cooperate. they weren't trusting in God. They didn't believe that God could do that. And I guess the human mind does that. You know, we learn to rely on ourselves, whether we're reliable or not. And sometimes we're not too reliable. But we like to rely on ourselves, but believing God and relying upon God is not always an easy task. And Israel didn't rely on God. There have been a number of documentaries on Patreon PBS television. I don't know whether you've seen any of them or not. But the Petra area and the city are composed of sandstone and beautiful colors of red. And it's a place with craggy mountains, and it's a very rugged country. But the sandstone mountains readily lead to carvings and caves and buildings where people have lived off and on over the years, over the centuries. And there's a narrow seek or an opening to get to the city. Some of you, have any of you ever been there? Any of you ever go there? My wife and I haven't either. But anyway, it's an interesting place. If you ever have an opportunity to see the documentary, if you have not, please view it. It's very interesting. When we look at that area, Edom, who was the firstborn twin of Jacob, and his name was Esau, but became known as Edom, which means red, when he sold his birthright for a bowl of red porridge. So he became known as Edom rather than Esau. Historians have assumed that Edom also occupied Petra, but Scripture deems otherwise. In the Zondervan Pictorial History of the Bible on page 740, it states that the only Edomite ruins are north of Petra, nothing in Petra, no Edomite history in Petra. I prepared a little rough drawing here, and I don't know whether you'll be able to see it thoroughly or not, but down here somewhere was Mount Sinai. And when they went to the north, they encountered Edom here, which is just north of Petra. And Edom wouldn't let them pass. They were going to go to war, and the God said, no, don't fight with Edom. Don't I gave them that land, so don't resist them, don't fight for that. Your way through that. But when Israel was traveling toward the promised land, Edom just wouldn't let them pass through or provide anything for them, because the offspring of Esau still hated Jacob. They still hated Jacob, whom they considered took Esau's birthright. And we know that Jacob and his mother, they had their part in doing that. But we find also in Romans chapter 9, God chose Jacob anyway. God chose Jacob to bless. And so rather than Esau. But the large population of Israel, which may have numbered, I don't know, 2 million, give or take a million. But Edom would not allow Israel to pass through their land. So in Numbers 10, but this map, as you can see, it was a windy day, and the shores of the Great Sea or the Mediterranean Sea were pretty rough on the landscape there. But anyway, this was the land that God gave to Edom, to Esau. So in Numbers chapter 10, Numbers chapter 10, verse 11. says, and it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year. That was after the Exodus. That was after God delivered Israel out of Egypt. In the second year, that the cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. And we know when the cloud moved, Israel had to move. And whenever God caused the cloud to move, well, they had to pick up all their things and travel. Verse 12, and the children of Israel then took their journeys out of the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. Now, this is the wilderness of Paran in this area. This is the wilderness of Paran. That's where it's located. But Young's Concordance gives a surprising definition that Paran is full of caverns. It's full of caves. And Strong's Concordance states to also embellish or decorate is what Paran means. And wherever this wilderness is located, it's full of caverns or caves. It was embellished or decorated with tombs even. Is this Petra? Because no city is more famous for its beautifully carved caves than Petra, and there's no other city in that area that meets the criteria. It's from here that Moses sent the 12 men, one from each tribe, to spy out the promised land. So they were here. They were here in this area, and Moses sent these 12 to spy out the land so they could see how productive it was. So, and of course, this is the promised land here west of the Dead or Salt Sea and the Sea of Galilee, or Kinnereth. And, of course, part of the area east of the Jordan River also became part of the promised land for Reuben and Gad and a half-tribe of Manasseh. But this is where they were sent out from to verify and to spy out the land and the productivity of the land so the people would know. In Numbers chapter 13, after 40 days, the 12 men came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of Israel to the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh. Now, Kadesh is here in this area. I don't have anything to scale here, so don't come measure it. It's just a rough idea, so we're all looking at the same thing at the same time. Now there are obviously maps in your, probably in most of your Bibles, and some of them are not correct as far as the location of Edom, because if you look at your maps in the Bible, if you have maps in the Bible, it will show Edom as part of Petra, or including Petra, and it didn't include Petra. So they were sent out for 40 days, and they came back to Kadesh. Now, Kadesh is a city. Here's Kadesh here. I think I showed you that. Kadesh is a city. Why was the city called Kadesh? Because in Hebrew, the word Kadesh means holy. It means holy. What made the place holy? Well, only God did. For only God is holy, and God dwelled in the cloud over the tabernacle, and the tabernacle and cloud were in the wilderness of Paran in Kadesh. Again, back to Numbers 13 and verse 26. Well, verse 25. And they returned from these 12 men returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran. to Kadesh and brought back word unto them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Now all the men brought back examples of the abundance of the land, grapes, pomegranates, figs, but only Joshua and Caleb brought back positive reports about the taking of the land. The land was productive, but taking the land, they weren't ready to rely upon God, because 10 of the 12 brought back evil reports, and God pronounced a punishment of 40 years, a year for each of the 40 days that they were spying out the land. And the 40 years punishment was upon all Israel except for Joshua and Caleb and their families, who were 20 years old and older, would all die in the wilderness. They would all die in the wilderness of Zin. Now, this is the, I don't have it designated, but this is the wilderness of Zin. It's a very arid area, a very desolate country. I don't know. Can you imagine living there for 40 years as Israel had to, but they were being punished. They were being punished. Well, this is the wilderness of Zin. It says it was toward the road to the Red Sea, but it wasn't on the Red Sea. It was in this area. Now, they were all to die in the wilderness of Zin during this 40 years, except for Moses, who would die on the east side of the Jordan River after he saw the promised land from Mount Nebo or from Mount Pisgah. This included his brother Aaron and his sister Miriam, who would die there in the wilderness. They would die after returning from the wilderness of Zin, which was probably another 37 and a half years, because they had already been gone over 2 years from Egypt. The historian Josephus, who lived during the time of Christ and the disciples, relates that Aaron died on one of the high mountains which encompasses Petra. And as Moses recounted the event of the 12 men who spied out the land in the book of Deuteronomy, as he prepared the congregation to be led by Joshua into the promised land. And of course, he made it clear that he wasn't allowed to go. He petitioned God, but God said no. And Moses himself died after God showed him the promised land. But previous to that, he had placed Reuben, Gad, he had placed Reuben, once they left this area, then on to take the promised land, and they went this way, avoiding Edom, and this became the land for Reuben, and right above it, Gad, and even further above became the half-tribe of Manasseh, the land given to the half-tribe of Manasseh. By the way, this green line is what was known as the King's Highway, and they weren't allowed to take the King's Highway. They had to go by way of the plain that was west of the highway and up through by the River Arnon. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, as Moses rehearsed with the nation of Israel about what had occurred, what had transpired, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 19, and he said, "And when we departed from Horeb," now Horeb was Mount Sinai, another name for Mount Sinai, "and when we departed from Horeb, we went through all that great and terrible wilderness." That was the wilderness of Zin that they were going to have to spend the next 37 and a half years in, which you saw by the way of the mountain of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea, which was the entrance to the promised land. Now this, it was just Kadesh before. The Barnea was added to Kadesh because of the wanderings of the congregation of Israel. And they wavered in their faith and had to wander for 40 years as punishment. And so Barnea means the wandering sons. The wandering sons. And so the Barnea was added to Kadesh. As the 12 men returned and recounted by Moses after the 40 years of wandering as preparation for the people to enter the promised land, and of course Moses is just recounting this now, but in verse 25, he says, "And they took of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down to us and brought us word again and said, it's a good land. It's a good land which the Lord our God does give us. Notwithstanding, you would not go up." Israel would not go up because they weren't willing to trust in God, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God. And you murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us. No, God didn't hate them. God was pretty upset with them, but he didn't hate them. But he has brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. That was their conclusion. He's brought us here to destroy us. Now, you know, how you could come to that after all that Israel had already been through, but that's what they came to. That, you know, that shows the, you know, the human mind and the lack of trust in God. In verse 28, he says, whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, that is these 10 who brought the negative reports, the people are greater and taller than we, they're giants, the cities are great and walled up to heaven, and moreover we've seen the sons of the Anakims there. Then I said to you, dread not, neither be afraid of them. Moses said, I reminded you, you don't have to be afraid of them. God will deliver us. The Lord your God who goes before you, verse 30, he shall fight for you according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness where you have seen how that the Lord your God bore you up, how he took you through all of the wilderness as a man does bear his son, in all the way that you went until you came into this place. Yet in this thing you did not believe the Lord your God. The real problem. Then in verse 39, it says, moreover, your little ones, which you said should be a prey, and your children, which in that day had no knowledge, your children weren't trained in good and evil, but they shall go in, and unto them will I give it, they shall possess it. But as for you, turn you and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. This was the wilderness of Zin here on the way to the Red Sea. It wasn't, they weren't going to the Red Sea again, but it was in this area again, this area of wilderness, desolation, and arid country. Verse 41. Then you answered and said to me, we have sinned against the Lord. Oh, we'll go up now. We'll go up and fight according to all that the Lord our God commanded us. And when you had girded us on every man his weapons of war, you were ready to go up the hill. Now, why they were going up the hill, this area here, There was a plain here, low-level plains, but this was hill country. This was hill country here. And so they went up the hill. They went up the hill to try to take the promised land. Verse 42 then of Deuteronomy 1 says, "And the Lord said unto me, saying to them," he said, "tell them, don't go up, neither fight, for I'm not among you. I'm not going to be with you. I'm not among you, lest you be smitten before your enemies. So I spoke unto you, and you would not hear, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord, and went presumptuously up unto the hill," into the hills there. "And the Amorites which dwelt in that mountain came out against you and chased you as bees do, and destroyed you even in Seir, even unto Hormah." Now here's Hormah. They made it up that far, but the Amorites were fighting them all the way and defeated them, because God said he wasn't with them. He said, You're not going to have my aid or my assistance. And so verse 45 says, "And you returned and you wept before the Lord," but it wasn't weeping that God needed, was it? He needed trust. That's what God was looking for, trust, belief. "But the Lord would not hearken to your voice, nor give ear unto you. So you abode in Kadesh many days, according to the days that you abode there." And that was the 40 days they were awaiting for the 12 men to return. Once Israel realized they had sinned, then they were ready to go up and take the land. But it was too late. It was too late. God said he wouldn't be with them. So Israel would have to wander in the wilderness of Zin for the remainder of the 40 years. When God returned Israel from the 37 years of wandering, after the 37 years of wandering in that wilderness, then to complete the 40 years, they were refused once again by Edom to pass through the land. Edom would not allow them to pass through the land, saying, "You shall not go through our land." So God had them travel by the Araba Plain. Now this was, the Araba Plain was here to the west of Edom's territory. And so they traveled by this plain and went up here and then turned east along the river Arnon there. Last Sabbath, Mr. Buchanan related the assignment of the original apostles who were to go to all nations, baptizing them and teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you, and I am with you always. And as he related that we too are given the same assignment. We're given the same assignment. We are ambassadors for Christ. We're also sent out into this world where there are many wolves. But God protects us at all times, under all circumstances. And as we know from the biblical record, God has done that with all whom he has called. It's amazing, God's protection and God's oversight of our lives now and throughout history. You know, Abraham, who was then Abram, was called upon to leave his country and go to the place where God would show him. It shows no reluctance on the part of Abram. Now, he had apparently been at war there in the Ur of the Chaldees, where he lived. His brother apparently had been killed, but he took with him Sarah and his father Terah, who died en route, and Lot, his oldest brother's son. And they traveled right through the land of promise because there was a famine in the land. And they came into Egypt. And when Abraham did not protect his wife God protected her, for God had in mind the birth of a son, Isaac, which neither Abraham nor Sarah was looking forward to at all, not at their age. But in Genesis chapter 12, we see God's protection right in the midst of Pharaoh's household. Genesis chapter 12. But it's interesting that Abram showed no reluctance to leave the land. But in Genesis chapter 12, verse 14, they had already determined, and for her protection, Abram said, just tell him you're my sister. But in verse 14, it came to pass that when Abram was coming to Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. The princes, even though she was quite, she was quite older. But the princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. They told Pharaoh how great she was. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. I don't think Abram bargained on this, but there's a lot of things that happen in our lives that we don't bargain on, do we? We don't bargain for. They happen. And things that happen whereby we have to learn to trust in God in those situations. But Abram didn't bargain on this. But the Pharaoh entreated Abram well for his sake, and he did sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. So Pharaoh blessed Abram. But in verse 17, the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And so Pharaoh called up Abram and said, "What is it you've done to me? Why did you do this? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why said you she's my sister? So I might have taken her to be my wife. Now therefore, behold your wife, take her and go your way." Because God had other plans for Abram and Sarah. Daniel and some of the princes of Israel were taken captive by the Babylonians, and later given prominence in the Babylonian government. But when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their Babylonian names, were called upon to worship the golden image that God, that Nebuchadnezzar created, they absolutely refused. Then they were placed in a fiery furnace. They miraculously survived by the power of God without even the smell of smoke or fire. You know, how incredible is that? God saved them in that fiery furnace in the midst of it. He didn't take them out of it. He saved them in the midst of. He protected them even in these extreme circumstances. In Daniel chapter 3, Daniel chapter 3, Daniel chapter 3, verse 17, when they were called upon to worship the image that Nebuchadnezzar had created, verse 17 said, "If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king, either way. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up." Well, of course, we know the story there, and we know that God saved them. But this is what God is able to do. It doesn't make any difference what the circumstances are. Whatever happens in our lives, God is able to save us. God is able to protect us. God is able to fulfill his job as our protector and our toward us at any time and in any given circumstance. Back to the story of Israel and their travels on the way to the promised land. In Numbers chapter 20, verse 14. Numbers chapter 20, verse 14. Then Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. We've covered this in part, but said, thus says your brother Israel, you know all the travail that's befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we've dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers. And when we cried unto the Lord, he heard our voice, and sent an angel, and has brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we're in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost of your border. We're near you. But we need to pass through your land. I pray you through your country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards. Neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We will not turn to the right hand or to the left until we have passed your borders. And Edom said unto him, you shall not pass by me, lest I come out against you with a sword. They were going to fight. So then in verse 21 says, thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border, wherefore Israel turned away from him. And the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh and came into Mount Hor. Now, H-O-R. Now, there's not much about Mount Hor that's stated in the Bible. But the historian Josephus, who lived about the time of Christ and the apostles, confirms that it would have been near Petra. Confirmed that it would have been near Petra. And if Edom had occupied Petra, Israel could not have been there. They could not have been there. But Numbers 33 relates all the journeys of Israel, and God took Israel to Kadesh from Mount Sinai, and once God removed them from Kadesh, Israel was at the edge of the land of Edom. In Numbers 33, verse 37, showing all the travels of Israel. And they removed from Kadesh, verse 37, Numbers 33, verse 37. They removed from Kadesh and pitched in Mount Hor, H-O-R, in the edge of the land of Edom. So it wasn't in Edom, but Mount Hor, H-O-R, and Josephus says that was Petra or near Petra. In verse 38, and Aaron the priest went up into Mount Hor at the commandment of the Lord, and he died there and was buried there. In the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the first day of the fifth month. Now these, Moab and Ammon, which were in this area, Moab and Ammon, and again, the areas of Moab and Ammon are not distinct, as most of the areas are not, but they were the offspring of Lot. You know, when, who was the nephew of Abraham, and when Abraham and Lot lived just north of Jerusalem, both Abraham and Lot were very wealthy, and there became strife between their herdsmen. In Genesis chapter 13, we see why Lot and his offspring lived in that area. Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13, verse 6. Genesis chapter 13, verse 6. It says, and the land was not able to bear both of them, and they might dwell, that they might dwell together. For their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's, of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell then in the land. And Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray you, between me and you, and between my herdmen and your herdmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself, I pray you, from me. If you will take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Abraham gave him the choice. You choose. You choose whichever land you want. And verse 10, and Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you come into Zoar. So Lot chose all the plain of Jordan. But when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah and all the cities of that eastern plain, the daughters who, you know, the daughters saw their mother. They saw their mother turn to a pillar of salt. And they saw all the destruction in the land where they lived. So it must have seemed like the end of the world. I think it must have seemed like the end of the world. They didn't want their father to die without a male heir. So they had male children, Moab and Ammon, with their father. And, of course, this is where they still settled, the offspring of Lot there in where it says Moab and Ammon. Again, the general area. It's, again, the lines aren't very specific. With all the things that God did in bringing Israel out of Egypt, and then ultimately the destruction of Jericho in such an incredible fashion, with all the walls collapsing, you know, again, what God does and the way he does it is nothing short of phenomenal, is it? All the destruction of all the people, and it had its desired effect on the people of the land. The Gibeonites, pretending to be from far off, yet dwelling near the city of Jerusalem, Israel made a covenant with them. God told them not to make a covenant, but they made a covenant with them. And the Gibeonites agreed to serve them, to serve Israel. And God honored that. But what God was doing with the nation of Israel had its desired effect as the taking of the in the taking of the promised land, so much so that the other nations united to resist Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 25. Now they had, as they went there to the east of the Jordan River, and this land was given to Reuben and Gad and then a half-tribe of Manasseh up near the Sea of Galilee. We see in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 20 to 25, with all the things that God did, said, this day will I begin to put the dread of you and the fear of you upon the nations that are under the whole heaven, who shall hear report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. And this helped them in taking the land, though the Though the people united and joined together to resist Israel. But I think it's important to, you know, the question has always arisen, well, how could God take people's land? Because it belonged to God. You have to understand that this land, all of it, this whole earth, belongs to God. God didn't place He did place Esau there, and he allowed Abraham and Lot to resolve their problem by placing Lot there and then his offspring there. But as he said there in Exodus chapter 19, verse 5, all the land is mine. It belongs to me. And he promised the land to Abraham's offspring. Now, God was prepared to deliver the nation of Israel into the promised land, but God made it clear about Israel as the nations they would displace. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, it wasn't because the nation of Israel were righteous and so great, but God had determined to give it to Israel, to Abraham's offspring and Isaac and Jacob's offspring forever. Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 1 says, "Hear, O Israel, you are to pass over Jordan this day to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than myself, or than yourself, rather, cities great and fenced up to heaven." Now, again, this was as Moses was preparing them to enter the promised land now, to cross the Jordan River, and to go in and take Jericho, and then they were to conquer the entirety of the land of Canaan and all the other people who lived there. Now, it's interesting. I mean, we see another time of God's protection, because God had placed Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh in their land on the east side of Jordan. But all the able males were to go with Israel to help them take their land. So that left the women and the children behind in their land. Well, who protected them? God did. God did. They weren't allowed to be taken or warred against, because the able men were to go with the rest of Israel to take their land before they could return. And Deuteronomy 9, verse 2 says, "A great and tall, the children, a people great and tall, the children of the Anakims, whom you know and of whom you have heard say, who can stand before the children of Anak?" That was a common saying, apparently. He said, "Understand, therefore, this day that the Lord your God is he who goes over before you. As a consuming fire, he shall destroy them, and he shall bring them down before your face. So shall you drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said. But speak not you in your heart after the Lord your God has cast them out from before you, saying, 'Oh, look what I have done. For my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land.' But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord doth drive them out from before us. And not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart do you go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations the Lord your God doth drive them out from before you, that he may perform the word which the Lord swore unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord your God gives you not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people. Remember and forget not how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness, from the day that you did depart out of the land of Egypt until you came to this place. You have been rebellious against the Lord." So God made it clear that Israel was not given the land because of their righteousness. But as through some of the research on Israel and the travel to Petra, it's interesting that the valley through Petra is actually named after Moses. It's actually named after Moses. And Petra, later when Judah took their possession, Petra became a part of Judah. So it's interesting, you know, what has occurred. But God does not have to have a place of protection. God can protect us under the most adverse circumstances one could ever imagine. And we just covered a little of that. But I think, you know, what is important for us to understand, you know, God has made the commitment of a place of safety for some portion of the church. And God will do it. God, you know, God will make known where and when this is according to his determination. The church has and can speculate about this matter, but only God knows. Another important point, as God says of his sheep, of which we are. John chapter 10. I don't remember whether Mr. Buchanan read this or not, but John chapter 10, verse 27, as he was talking about we are considered sheep. Verse 27, John chapter 10, verse 27, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall anyone ever pluck them out of my hand. Those were the words of Christ. No one will ever pluck them out of my hand. And my Father who gave them me is greater than all. And no one is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand either. And I and my Father are one. And you can be assured that this is true. It's an absolute assurance, isn't it? We can bank on this. We can put our trust in this promise always. For only God can make you and me dwell in safety. In Psalm chapter 4, Psalm chapter 4. Psalm chapter 4, verse 8 says, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep. We can be at peace and sleep. I know some of us have insomnia, and I'm one of them. But I know God promises that we can lay down in peace and sleep. For you, Lord, only make me dwell in safety. Because only God can do that, and God shall do that, and God promises to do that.